versus Mendez, amended, 18-1259.
May it please the court. My name is Howard Pincus from the Federal Public Defender, and I represent Armando Mendez. Colorado attempt speaks more broadly than generic attempt. The district court therefore erred in counting Mr. Mendez's Colorado conviction for attempted robbery as a crime of violence and increasing his guideline range from 15 to 21 months to 30 to 37 months. As this court has held, generic attempt requires the commission of a substantial step towards commission of the crime. The Colorado attempt statute says the conduct strongly corroborative of the firmness of the actor's criminal purpose is a substantial step. So in Colorado, every act that strongly corroborates that purpose is necessarily a substantial step. The model penal code, which is the source of the substantial test and which is followed by the large majority of substantial step jurisdictions, does not make this equation. The model code does not say that a substantial step is any conduct that is strongly corroborative of the actor's purpose.
And it doesn't say that it is not sufficient in every instance either.
It doesn't say there can be acts that are strongly corroborative that are a substantial step. That's a requirement that for the substantial test under the model penal code. What the model penal code says, an act shall not be found to be a substantial step unless it is strongly corroborative of the actor's purpose. So what in Colorado is a sufficient condition for a substantial step is only necessary.
And the model penal code doesn't say it's not sufficient under its provision. It just doesn't say.
That formulation of shall not be unless does state a necessary but not sufficient condition. And if you look at the commentary...
It states a necessary condition. Why does it say a necessary but not sufficient condition?
Well, if they had wanted it to read as a sufficient condition, they could easily have done what Colorado did. And also, if you look at that, the second sentence of that paragraph that talks about shall not be a sufficient condition unless it is strongly corroborative, it says the following are examples of conduct that, if strongly corroborative of the actor's intent, shall not be held as a matter of law to be not a substantial step. So that is saying, if it were enough under the code that strongly corroborative were automatically a substantial step, then any act strongly corroborative would automatically not be insufficient as a matter of law. There would be no need for that sentence. And also, if you look at the model code commentary at page 329, the code says that the commentary say that what is a substantial step is obviously a matter of degree, and that the code retained an element of imprecision on the preparation attempt problem. The Colorado Supreme Court has said in Lenhart that there is no imprecision in that regard because it is enough that the act is strongly corroborative.
And Lenhart uses very, very similar language. I'm going to try to find it right now, but I know it does. That talks about the fact that, let's see here, go ahead with your argument. I'll find it.
He'll pounce on you later.
Yes. Well, what Lenhart says is that conduct that is strongly corroborative is sufficient in itself. And it makes the very point about how Colorado law differs from the model penal code. It says what in Colorado is a sufficient step is only necessary under the model penal code. That we have gone further in Colorado and have made it a sufficient step without more. That
conduct Leonard says, the question whether particular conduct constitutes a substantial step, of course, remains a matter of degree and can no more be resolved by mechanical rule or litmus test than could the question whether the actor's conduct was too remote or failed to progress beyond mere preparation. That language sounds exactly like the model penal code that you just talked about.
But what the Colorado Supreme Court is saying there in Leonard is that it's impossible to say what is strongly corroborative. But if it is strongly corroborative, without more, it is a substantial step. The model penal code says a substantial step that is strongly corroborative. That's what the code is requiring, a substantial step that is strongly corroborative. And that's different than just any strongly corroborative act is necessarily a substantial step.
It seems to me that you have to work pretty hard, Mr. Pincus, to get to where you're trying to get, to be able to claim that this is a plainly overbroad Colorado provision. Because on the face of the Model Penal Code, it does not preclude that those two things are exactly the same.
Well, we have the Colorado Supreme Court in Leonard saying that there is a difference, that Colorado requires only a strongly corroborative act. It does away with this notion of how preparatory things are.
Okay. Do we have to defer to Linhart's reading of the Model Penal Code? There are two different things. Maybe we defer to Linhart's reading of Colorado law, but what is reading the Model Penal Code is not something that I think I'm not aware that we should have to defer to that.
We have to defer, obviously, to Colorado Supreme Court on what Colorado law is.
Correct.
And they say substantial, strongly corroborative is always a substantial step. The Model Penal Code doesn't say that. In fact, the commentaries suggest that that's not the case, that it's still retaining an element of imprecision on the preparation attempt problem.
As a matter of logic and diction, you make a very strong argument, but when I try to think of a case that would fit the model that could be prosecuted in Colorado, successfully prosecuted, but not under the Model Penal Code, I pretty much come up empty. And this seems to be the best example I've come across of the proposition the Supreme Court has expressed, that it's got to be a realistic possibility. I don't know, I'm sure that's not the Supreme Court's language. Something along the lines, you've got to have a realistic possibility that someone could be prosecuted under the state law that would not be prosecuted, successfully prosecuted under the generic offense. Here we're saying the generic offense is the Model Penal Code language. And it seemed to me that the government's brief challenged you to come up with something. You made an argument that, well, because the language is different, that realistic possibility type of analysis doesn't apply. But if we disagree with you and think that you do need to come up with some realistic possibility, I'm sure you've thought about it. I know you too well. What have you come up with?
Well, suppose, for example, that somebody expresses a very firm intent to kill somebody, very averse to guns, but then goes out and buys a gun. That would typically be mere preparation under most views of attempt, but that would be strongly corroborative of his intent. Or suppose somebody has expressed an intent to kill somebody by poisoning them and spends an inordinate amount of effort going out and getting a mortar and pestle, goes to 18 different stores to find something that can grind up the poison. That would still be very far removed from the ultimate crime and would usually be thought of as not a substantial
step. I thought we have cases
step.
Like that, in fact, in the federal prosecution for drugs. If you get the precursors for methamphetamine, for example, and you buy those, that's enough to show an attempt. I thought I haven't researched that specific thing recently, but I thought we had some cases indicating that that's enough for an attempt.
Well,
when there's no legitimate reason to get those precursors anyway.
Obviously, I'm not familiar with what exactly you're speaking about, but we criminalize the mere possession of precursor chemicals. So I don't think that operates against that.
It could be you buy some Sudafed, and you get some, I don't know whether you get vinegar. I can't remember what the household chemicals you put together to make
the recipe.
Yeah, I've it's been so long.
But if you just bought the Sudafed and there was nothing else there, I don't think that would be enough to prosecute for attempt.
Right.
Or let's say...
And that probably wouldn't be enough to be strongly corroborative either.
It could be, depending on what other evidence of how strongly you stated your intent and how much effort you went to get that. Or suppose somebody says they're going to kill their spouse for the insurance proceeds, and they then go out and buy lots of insurance policies on their wife, or they uncharacteristically go out and incur a lot of debt to buy luxury goods. That might be strongly corroborative of their intent, but it's not a substantial step. Or somebody who tells a lot of people that he's going to kill somebody and then publishes a manifesto on that. That's not what we would ordinarily think of as a substantial step towards the commission of the crime, but it would be strongly corroborative of that person's intent. And back to the point that you made in the preface to your question is, we don't have to make that showing. There's no need to resort to legal imagination here, because the Colorado Supreme Court has told us that its definition of substantial step is different than the model penal code.
And we don't have to believe them. We don't have to believe their reading of the model penal code. And that Leonard case didn't give us a case, did it? It didn't give us an example of any application in which there was space between the model penal code and Colorado law.
No, but what it said was, we don't have to worry about the attempt preparation distinction that is at the heart of a lot of attempt cases, because in Colorado, it's sufficient without more that the conduct is strongly corroborative, the act is strongly corroborative of the criminal purpose.
And so, Leonard says that it still considers mere preparation. The notion of mere preparation continues to. I'm reading from page. I guess it's
1114.
Yes. So mere preparation still is a factor that's considered in Colorado law.
It says it's useful to show things that might not be strong corroboration, but it immediately says in the very next passage that what matters under Colorado is only strongly corroborative. And it later goes on to say that conduct that is strongly corroborative of criminal purpose is sufficient without more to make out a substantial step.
But to get back to Judge Hartz's question, is it your premise then that because Leonard tells us that there's space between Colorado law and model penal code, assuming the model penal code is in fact the generic definition of attempt, that in itself means you don't have to give us a case where there's realistic, so that we can infer there's a realistic possibility that this would be applied?
Well, it's not just that Leonard says it, it's that the language of the two provisions are very different, that the model penal code uses the language of a necessary but not sufficient condition, that's confirmed by the model penal code commentaries, and what the Colorado Supreme Court has said about its attempt statute, and that it's saying that we don't have to get involved in the attempt preparation distinction, but that the model penal code in its commentary says that we do. So that's the reason why there is space. When the Colorado Supreme Court says the jury and we as a reviewing court assessing sufficiency of the evidence don't have to get, let me get the actual language, do not also have the task of, quote, resolving the policy choice of when acts of preparation have become criminal. And that's at page 1115 of Leonard. I'd like to just mention the government's reliance on the rough correspondence approach. And that actually has no application here, because that is available when the rough correspondence approach doesn't allow a court to say, well, it's just a little overbroad, or there are only a few instances where something is overbroad, so therefore it's close enough. What the rough correspondence cases say, or Taylor, which is the source of it, says, is that it has to correspond in substance, and the differences in terminology don't matter.
It has to roughly correspond in substance.
It has to have the same operative effect. It doesn't say roughly correspond in substance, it has to, in substance, be the same. The fact that different terminology is used where the substance is the same doesn't make a difference. Michigan doesn't have a burglary statute, but has another statute that criminalizes things that we would ordinarily think of as burglary. That's fine. And I think we talked about Sarbia, which is a case the government relies on about Nevada law, and we said it was not a rough correspondence case. In fact, it really should be said that it is a rough correspondence case, because what Sarbia said is that although Nevada uses slight act or some act, in practice, it treats it the same as a substantial step.
I like that word in practice, because what that word in practice means is you need to give us a case. So, because yes, there's a linguistic difference between the model penal code and Colorado law, but the only way we're going to know whether there's a substantive difference between the two is if you give us a case.
No, we don't have to give a case because the Colorado Supreme Court has said there's a difference, and has said the preparation attempt problem that is inherent in most substantial step cases isn't a problem in Colorado. So if the government wants to show that in practice they're the same, that's for the government to do. So we would ask this court to vacate Mr. Mendez's conviction and remand with instructions to use a guideline range of 15 to 21 months. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Pincus. Paul Farley for the United States. I'd like to start by picking up on a point that Judge Hartz made earlier. The Supreme Court said that for state law to be outside the generic definition, there needs to be more than legal imagination. It requires a realistic probability, which I think was the phrase that we were looking for, not a theoretical possibility that the state would apply its statute to conduct that falls outside the generic definition. An offender must at least point to his own case or other cases in which the state courts, in fact, did apply the statute in the special, non-generic manner for which he argues. Now, this is the approach that was followed by the Eighth Circuit in the Alexander and Darden cases, the Fifth Circuit in Garcia-Figueroa, the Sixth in Havis, the Ninth in Saavedra-Velasquez. They've all followed suit and insisted that to successfully challenge a state attempt to statute as being more broad than the generic, there has to be at least one real-world case. Now here, Colorado's attempt law was changed in 1971. And in the past half century, nearly, we don't have a single case which the defense can point to where Colorado has applied its attempt law in an over-inclusive fashion. We've had some discussion this morning about possible hypotheticals. This might be a substantial step. This might not be. That's all well and good, but that isn't what the Colorado courts have told us. And here, we would point the court towards the Sarbia case. The Sarbia case, we had Nevada law, which talked about some act or a slight act being sufficient for a substantial step. So textually, on the face of it, we might say, wow, that's a whole lot less than the model penal code is requiring. What the Ninth Circuit did there was do a survey of Nevada cases and came to the conclusion, we can't find a way or a place where the Nevada courts have applied this apparently much narrower language in anything outside what is the generic application. And so...
Do you have any case where the Colorado courts have thrown out a prosecution that might seem to fit the Colorado formulation, but not the model penal code?
I can't point to such a case, Your Honor, but of course our view of it is that a substantial step statute meets the generic requirements. And so you look at Professor Lefebvre, who I'd say probably knows more about this than I do, certainly has thought more about it than I have. He doesn't see any difference between those states which have just substantial step in the requirement and the 11 other states that omit the strongly corroborative language. In other words, he finds there's 23 states that are following what he regards as the majority rule. In substantial step, and the rest of it is, well, as Judge Moore put it, you know, swinging on the jungle gyms of the linguistic playground. Because what we're really looking for is not how it's expressed, but how it operates. And again, the Sarbia case might be a good...
Okay. I didn't think the examples he gave were frivolous. There are cases in which intent has been explicitly expressed.
They're not frivolous, Your Honor. They're theoretical.
Well, but... Maybe they haven't happened. If they did happen,
maybe it's rare for people to express themselves that way, but I'd like to feel somewhat comfortable, somewhat confident that they couldn't be prosecuted. And I'm curious if Lefebvre confronts that issue of a case where the expression of intent is so unequivocal, so strong, that the additional evidence of acts would have a hard time saying that was a substantial step.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think this is why that sort of Judge Moore's sort of freewheeling expression of it resonates with me, because if we look at, in the reply brief, for example, the defense says that the Gordon case, this court's Gordon case, the published decision from, I think it's 2013, actually creates two additional requirements. It says it has to be more than mere preparation, and it'll ordinarily result in the commission of a crime. These aren't additional freestanding requirements, substantial step. They're simply different ways of trying to express the same idea, and this is important, embracing the same kind of conduct. And so even though beyond mere preparation and ordinarily result don't appear in the statutory text, they're both apt ways of explaining what a substantial step is. And we pointed this out in the 28J we filed with some Colorado appellate cases saying, oh yeah, more than mere preparation is part of what we're talking about. And oh yeah, this will, in the ordinary course of events, lead to the culmination of the crime. And this court itself has likewise used a variety of language to describe conduct demonstrating the sufficient firmness of the defendant's criminal intent. It's called it an appreciable fragment of the crime. It's an action of substantiality that, unless frustrated, the crime would have occurred, and must unequivocally mark the defendant's acts as criminals. This language, this word salad, is all different ways of trying to get our arms around what a substantial step is. And part of the reason that we find ourselves here is that what is an attempt it largely depends on the facts of the circumstance and the elements of the predicate offense. Substantial step is sort of an abstract concept. And so it's not enough to say, well, this would be a substantial step for a kidnapping, but it wouldn't be for a murder, right? Because different elements of the statutes, different factual circumstances. So I'm not sure I can give you the bright line that you're wanting.
Well, this one. My question wasn't a bright line. I was wondering if he confronts that issue, perhaps under the formulation in Colorado and other similar statutes, the fact that the intent is expressed so clearly might make it possible to convict with much less of a substantial step. And because you say he equates the two, does he consider that possibility and explain why that's not a good argument?
I hesitate just to read to you, but in Lefebvre's treatise 11.4a, he captions the confusion. he says, precisely what kind of act or omission is required is not made very clear by the language which has traditionally been used by courts and legislatures. It's commonly stated that more than an act of preparation must occur, which perhaps is of some help, although the situation is confused somewhat because courts occasionally say that preparatory acts will be enough under certain circumstances. You know, and so we kind of start down that road where sometimes it may be more acceptable and may not than others. Says different wording is to be found. Conduct which tends to affect the commission of a crime, an act in furtherance of or tending directly toward, which constitutes a substantial step toward. Again, substantial step is the model penal code's way of kind of gathering these ideas, these expressions under one roof. And when we're looking at a generic, a rough correspondence to a generic offense, substantial step, that language in the statute, is the rough correspondence. Now, if we find real-world practical cases where a given state has applied their law in a way that takes it outside the generic, then we know. But it's not the words of the statute, it's how it works. In this regard, you know, we did both discuss a bit in our brief and also in 28J with a recent decision from the Eighth Circuit, the Missouri statute, which is expressed in time in terms exactly as the Colorado statute. And what the Missouri or the Eighth Circuit did time and again was go back and look at the Missouri courts and say, have they applied this in an over-inclusive fashion? And in the Darden case, the most recent one, there had been an intervening decision of the Missouri Supreme Court where the defendant said, we think now this takes Missouri attempt outside, and the Eighth Circuit undertook that analysis. And so I think by using the substantial step formulation that presumptively brings a state within the generic definition, and it's incumbent upon a defendant to show it's been applied outside. I don't think there's any other way of doing it. That's what I have on this point. No, I really think that's the bottom line.
I don't think anybody here is complaining, so.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I've given everyone else an extra minute.
I was wondering. I didn't want to assume.
But I've decided not to for you.
Very quickly, on Sarbia, the Nevada courts apparently made plain in their case law that there was a congruence between substantial step and their language. Colorado, in contrast, has said there's a difference. So that case does not apply here. In terms of the word salad that Mr. Farley referred to, all of the examples he gave were of acts that were along the progression or close to the crime. They weren't ones that just corroborated the person's intent. He spoke about the what was in the Rule 28J letters, and I just referred the court back to a response that we filed last night. And unless the court has any further questions, we'd ask the court to vacate and remand. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Interesting day. Case is submitted. Counsel excused. Court will be in recess till 8:30 tomorrow morning.